Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. We'll have Vinny Goodwill from Yahoo later this hour at 7:30. Talking NBA Finals, which gets underway tonight, the Thunder and the Pacers. We'll have Charles Robinson coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the Titans and all things NFL with him. I expect a full report, Joe, from Charles Robinson on each team and their interest level in Will Levis.
That's right. We'll see what happens. All 32.
We gave him homework.
I want the return from, all 31 other teams.
Yeah.
What the return will be for Will Levis.
Hey, maybe Vrabes. Get up there and be the backup.
He had some good games for Vrabes.
Some. Yes,
go
he did.
There and compete with Drake May.
Maybe so. Speaking of quarterbacks and Titans quarterbacks, boy, there's one person out there that absolutely loves Cam Ward. Lewis Riddick, who, if you'll remember, we had discussions about in the pre-draft process, Joe, and he was talking about, you know, believing that Cam Ward could have the same impact that Patrick Mahomes had, and was like, so do you mean like three Super Bowls and being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time? Is that the impact we're talking about? Because if so, that's awesome. Take him if you're the Titans.
Pretty good impact.
Loved him some Cam Ward. Well, he was on NFL Live yesterday and was talking about Cam Ward and kind of the moxie and the attitude that he brings to the table and how it's exactly what the Tennessee Titans need. Here's what Lewis Riddick had to say on ESPN yesterday.
I think the thing that you're going to see with Cam Ward as this season goes on and as his career progresses is that this guy is a football savant when it comes to being able to digest large amounts of information and really play at a high level in terms of football IQ. I love the kid, absolutely love him, and he is a stone-cold killer of a leader, and I think that's exactly what Tennessee needed.
You're not going to find anybody out there, Joe, that has been more high on Cam Ward than Lewis Riddick has been over the last few weeks. The impact stuff with Mahomes, we both, when he said that, was like, really? It's a heck of a statement that you're making. And then yesterday he's talking about how much of a stone-cold killer he is. He loves his approach and said there in that clip, I love Cam Ward. I just love him. Lewis Riddick, a big fan of Cam Ward out there. If you're a Titans fan looking for some Cam Ward love and you don't think you've gotten enough, just go watch Lewis Riddick for a while.
Lewis Riddick's been up for some jobs. Obviously, he used to be in personnel in the NFL, the Eagles. I think Eagles and maybe one other team. But if Cam Ward becomes an absolute star, I think someone's got to hire Lewis Riddick.
I agree.
Because he's on an island. There are other people who like Cam Ward.
Sure. But not to this level.
No.
I haven't heard it. Very many people, I don't think I've heard anyone that's as bullish as he is on Ward.
Yeah. And it's on multiple fronts, the digesting large amounts of information and the leadership. Obviously, thinks he's a great player. So, Lewis is if this turns out well, Titans fans obviously hope he's right. If he is, got to tip the cap to him on that. So, I mean, it all sounds great.
Yeah, it does.
It all sounds very exciting. You know, it's still like even with all those things that he's talking about. I'm not doubting, you're hearing all good things about Cam Ward and everything. And obviously he's been in different systems. He's played a lot of football. So you'd think that he'd be more ready than some guys who come in this league. Like compare his experiences to like Anthony Richardson's, for example, like so different in terms of the amount, the volume of information, different systems, things like that. I mean, still, need to see what happens on game days. And that's what Lewis Riddick and that's what everybody who is observing this has no idea like what it'll be. Just don't know. It doesn't all come together for you on the field.
Well, I will say what he's specifically talking about here, like with the preparation and the confidence and the approach that Cam Ward has. And we talked about it throughout the draft, like you watching him and the way that he handled himself throughout all the draft stuff. It's hard not to walk away from that and be pretty impressed, right? Like, he's a guy that when you hear him talk and you hear him, like, kind of think through the game, you walk away from it, and I think it's not a surprise why the Titans would have kind of loved him in the meetings, right? I think even from the outside, you can see it. Then the question really becomes down, all right, how much does that actually matter? Because we know that if you can't put the ball where you need to put it on a consistent basis at the NFL level, there are just huge limitations as to what that means. Now, on the flip side of that, Joe, if you are a guy that recognizes what you're seeing in front of you, you're able to get yourself out of trouble, you're able to make the right reads, make the right throws, all that other stuff and the moxie and the confidence and the ability to connect with teammates, which it looks like he's doing really well, all that stuff matters at that point. Like, I think that's how you end up becoming, you know, kind of that extra level of great.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it comes down to the physical and mental abilities of playing the quarterback position first and foremost.
Yeah, and again, it's like, yeah, the accuracy, hitting the spot over and over again at a high, high level. And look, there are plays that he didn't get away with, but some he did too at Miami that he definitely will not get away with in the NFL.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you can't change? Doesn't mean you can't recognize the enhanced speed of the game and all those things? But I'm just saying, like, there are just things that he did in college you can't do in the NFL. So we'll see. But yeah, Ryan at 40 points out. Guy, Good Morning Football is a big Cam. I mean, there are other Cam fans out there.
I just don't know that I've heard anybody quite as extreme as Lewis Riddick. I mean, look, the one comment he made by himself of the same impact as Mahomes, it's like, that's a heck of a bar, my friend, that you're throwing out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, it's like someone needed to pin that down. Okay, what exactly do you mean? But still, clearly, he's not backing down on this. Is this fake? This is a fake from LD from McMinnville, right? He's making this up.
I haven't seen it. Hold on.
Oh, I thought you said – who said are you joking? Is that actually Chase? Is Chase on our text line right now?
Must be. It was not me. I didn't do it. Okay. Did you guys hear Stilly compare himself to Cam Ward and tell the story about when he first started at the station, he'd come in at 11 a.m. to prepare for a 2 p.m. show?
Ian's in there laughing. No, I did not hear this. I hope it's true. I hope it's true.
I didn't
hear
it.
I hope you're not just pulling our leg, LD. Tom Brady wouldn't do that.
You know, I could. I think I could see Stilly saying that.
And what's up with Chase responding on our text line? Chase is just getting in there, and it says Chase McKay, but I thought maybe that was just like
I didn't
you.
Do it. I didn't do it. Maybe it was Ian.
Not me.
Ian didn't do it. If it wasn't me, it wasn't Ian.
I have not seen Chase interfere with our interactions with our readers. You know.
I don't know.
I may have to get on there in the question of the day and put in my 2 cents today.
I mean, you know, he did say that Floyd told him that he approaches the radio job like Tom Brady approached playing quarterback. So if you've got that going for you, maybe it is like Cam Ward.
I mean, I guess if you've already said that, this is kind of tame by comparison, right?
Yeah.
Bottom line is, if you want someone who listens to freaking podcasts, let me tell you something. Let me tell you. Watch out. Everybody get out of the way. Watch the master at work as he listens to podcasts.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Some other comments on the Titans offense that I think is probably underrated, and I think it helped Cam Ward in a huge way that we'll get into coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Don't miss out on Nashville's best deals. Great offers for 312 Pizza, Beach Bend Amusement Park and Splash Lagoon Water Park, Central Barbecue, Fog Street Lawn Club, and more. You can get them now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. So make sure you check that out. We'll have Vinny Goodwill from Yahoo coming up at 7:30. We'll get into the NBA Finals with him, which begins again tonight between Oklahoma City and Indiana. And some mixed reviews on the excitement level for how excited people are for the NBA Finals coming up.
Yeah. It was good to see someone say they're excited. I'm hopeful, you know, that it'll be good. I just think there's a little bit of a mismatch. I'm not worried about the market size. But, the lack of star power, I get that complaint. I mean, there are some really good players in the series. SGA is
including the league MVP.
Yeah, league MVP. But he's early in that.
Yeah.
you know, becoming a star phase. I just think that they're a lot better than the Pacers.
I
hope I'm wrong. I hope it's good.
We'll find out. We'll get into that more here in about 12 to 13 minutes here on the program. We did find the Stillman audio from yesterday, so it's good. Good to know that Cam Ward's got some similarities there.
Yeah.
Just showing up early.
Tell you what, man. People are like, whoa! Look at this guy. You send him home. Working way too hard, buddy. I love people doing the jobs we do, talking about how hard they work.
And let me be clear. Jared works hard.
Yes, but I'm saying all of us. None of us should talk about how hard we work, okay? Yes. We're sitting here freaking talking about sports. My God. There's people listening right now who are going to jobs where they actually work hard.
that matter. Yes. Thank you.
I tell you, man, I talked for 7 straight minutes about Cam Ward. It was really hard.
And then there's a guy listening right now that's going to, you know, go work on one of those underwater, like, oil rigs out there. Listening on our app. But other than that, we're working hard.
Yeah, but have you ever filled out a grid with topics about sports? Try that one day, buddy.
Speaking of sports, there is one player on the Titans offense that, Joe, the more I think about it, the more I don't think they can afford to lose him this year. And it's not Cam Ward, because that's too obvious. Cam Ward, we all understand that. Like, the quarterback doesn't need to get hurt. It would be great if your offensive line stayed healthy. But I'm looking at this offense right now. We had, you know, the Calvin Ridley discussion yesterday, and it's like, wow, not feeling overly great about the receiving core other than Calvin Ridley right now. There's a lot of either unproven guys there when you're talking about the rookies. Tyler Lockett on the backside of his career. What's he got left in the tank moving down the stretch? And the more I look at it, the more I think Tony Pollard is just going to have to be a massive part of the offense this year. He is going to have to be a guy that they really rely on in the running game to take some of the load off of the passing game and off of Cam Ward. And I know Titans fans hear that, and for some people, Joe, their eyes glaze over because they're like, good Lord, all we do around here is run the football. All we've ever done as a franchise is run the football. Can we please have a quarterback that comes in and throws it all around the yard? And it's one of those quarterbacks that we talk about at the end of the year that have some of the best passing numbers in the league. And I understand that, and hopefully Cam Ward gets to that point. As a rookie, I think it's going to be pretty important for the Titans to be able to run the ball pretty effectively. And Tim Hasselbeck was on with DVD and talked about that very thing. Here's what Tim Hasselbeck had to say on the Titans running game.
I think I would say the run game, mm-hmm. You know. So I think, like, if you're saying play, like, the running back position, you say it, like, when you think about, I was talking, you know, earlier today about the Texans, and the conversation was revolving around C.J. Stroud, how to get him better. You go back to his rookie year when he played well, they ran the ball really well. Like, I think, like, you know, for the Titans to make a jump, and ultimately, like, we all know Cam Ward would be the one that's getting all the credit for it. But, like, for them to make a jump, yes, he would have to play well. But I think it would have to be a running back that steps up and plays really well, you know, is a 1,000-yard rusher, like that type of stuff.
So that was Hasselbeck on with DVD. Now you look at Pollard, and it's been interesting to hear Callahan kind of talk about the running back position and how he'd like to see it maybe more divvied up than it was last year. Pollard last year, 260 carries, just over 1,000 yards at 1,079. And 5 touchdowns. You'd probably like to see the touchdown total go up running the ball this year.
NWI scored them all.
NWI did score a lot of touchdowns for this team last year. So what do you make of what Hasselbeck threw out there and the idea of the running game maybe not getting enough discussion heading into this year for how important that's going to be for Cam Ward in this offense?
Yeah, hugely important. Always important for a quarterback and a team. It's football. It's always going to be football. It's always going to be running the ball matters. Look around the league, you know, the one team, and I know it's like a pretty good freaking team that it, you know, it's almost there as just a occasional changeup would be the Chiefs. I mean, even the Bills. I mean, you think about, you know, like they have not had, although they have a good running back now, but you know, they have not always had a great running back, but the QB run game has been a huge part of it. Just one way or another, running the football matters. Pollard's good. I think he's one of the better players on the team. Maybe it's maybe part of the eyes glazing over and lack of excitement about it is just because, like, the last guy just went to Baltimore and had 1,900 yards last year.
Could be.
I mean, maybe, you know, that could be part of it. Like,
he's pretty good.
You can't, it's hard to get excited about this guy when, like, you're one of your best players of all time just did what he did.
That's fair.
He's probably going to have a huge year this year. But, no, look, I mean, Tony Pollard's really good. I'm curious to see if they do divvy it up more, how that looks, because I guess I'm kind of like, seems like everybody else, which is just, I don't know about out or down on Tajay Spears, but just sort of, you know, I think the excitement on him's worn off a little bit, you know.
I'm not excited about Tajay Spears, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and I do, I like Mullings, I like that pick where they got him, and I think he's an intriguing power back, but what is that? Still, what does that mean? Like, if I'm like the way Tony Pollard played last year, if I have third and one this year, I'm going to him.
Yeah, that's what, like, I look at Callahan's comments, and he's talking about trying to play, I guess, more running back by committee, and how in a perfect world you'd like to divvy up the carries a little bit more. And, like, my question is, do you have the guys to do that? You know, it's does Spears, does he need to be on the field more than he's been on the field? Now, I know Spears last year was dealing with injuries, right? So that's certainly part of this. And when you look at the lack of production from him a year ago, that's a big part of it, is the injuries that took place. But I look at their running back room right now, and it's like, you know, I don't think Tony Pollard is in the same stratosphere as Derrick Henry, but Tony Pollard, I think, is good enough to be a lead back in the NFL. Do you have, like, is Spears good enough to warrant taking that many snaps away from Pollard, I guess would be my question.
Not from what I, not based on last year, no. I guess the year before, look, going into last year, I thought it was really interesting. Like, is this an even split? We talked about that some. Like, who actually gets more carries, you know? And then it became very clear that there's a difference in the quality between those two guys. But, you know, Spears also had some injuries, and that's, you know, it's the first thing you think of, like, when he was drafted. But don't ruin his big night. Yeah. Hashtag, let's blame Ram.
Yeah.
I just, last year, there was a clear divide, so unless they're, and you know, what you hope if you're the Titans or a Titans fan is that it's not like they become closer because Pollard regresses some. You know, if Pollard's at the same level, it's hard for me to see why Spears would take many carries from him.
I would agree. Now, having said that, Pollard, what he gave you last year, is that just gonna? I mean, that's basically what he is, right? Like he's a right at 1,000-yard guy, pretty much. The last 3 years, he's had 1,007, 1,005, and 1,079. Like, it's consistency.
Hopefully there's some contract incentives that he just barely kicked in all three times.
Yeah, maybe,
you know?
So. Like, but that's exactly where he kind of ends up every year. Now, you know, probably the number that I pay attention to a little bit more is the yards per attempt. And the big concern with him last year was he went from 5.2 yards per attempt in 2022 with Dallas to 4 in 2023. Yeah. And last year he was at 4.2. So can you get that number up? Yeah. Because some of that's probably on him. Some of that's definitely on the offensive line. And they've got to be a better offensive line all the way around the board. And we focus so much on the pass protection part of that. They got to improve as a running offensive line this year too.
Yeah. And look, if they improve as a passing offense, if you actually give defenses something to think about,
yes,
and you put them in actual conflict, well, then you'll find better running lanes too. You know, both sides run and pass feed each other if you can actually find balance. So can the offensive line pass block to allow a better passing game? That will help the running game. That will probably help that average. I mean, Derrick Henry, you saw him last year. He's still a great player. He's one of the top five backs in the NFL. What was his yard per carry the last couple years with the Titans? It wasn't good. Yep. He was running into brick walls. The offense was just barren. And so there's only so much you can do with that, no matter how good of a back you are.
And then he went to Baltimore, and he got to 5.9 yards per carry last year, the highest of his career.
Yeah, like, how about that?
How about that? That's some good stuff. We'll be joined
by – he didn't change.
No. We'll be joined by Vinny Goodwill from Yahoo coming up next. Get his thoughts on the NBA Finals, which begins tonight. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning, and it is time for the NBA Finals. They begin today, and to help us talk more about that, we head to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Vincent Goodwill from Yahoo, who covers all things NBA. Vinny, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing awesome, man. Great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, I'll just start here with you. Personally, I'm excited about this matchup. Now, I've watched a lot of the Thunder this year, and they are an unbelievable team. Obviously, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander leads the way for them, but they're very deep. They're very talented. It's been awesome to watch what Haliburton and Indiana have done so far in the postseason. There's a lot of discussion about this matchup around the league in terms of, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing for the NBA to have this as the finals? Where do you come down on that, and what's your excitement level for this series as it kicks off tonight?
I think people have to make up their minds. I think we have to make sure that we are not listening to unserious people who don't watch the NBA or don't care for usual NBA discussion anyway, when they say, you know, oh, is this good for the NBA when you have smaller markets? But then when it's Lakers and Celtics, they're complaining that the NBA is rigged and only cares about the big markets. Like, they have to make up their minds, and we have to make up our minds as far as not listening to the nonsense. If you have compelling basketball players and compelling stories and excellent basketball teams, I think that is what should drive the conversation. I tend to agree with you. Oklahoma City is a really, really a historically great team. Excuse me. Historically great team. 68 wins and the net rating and the double-digit wins and everything else. It's just the fact that they play in Oklahoma City, and usually those players who play for that franchise since the Durant-Westbrook era, they don't seem to have a personality. And I think when you talk about the casual fan, you want to know the players before they get to the NBA Finals so you can feel some level of investment. If you don't know the jersey, you got to know the players. And I think that's kind of the case here. I like the Indiana Pacers. I like the way that they play. Tyrese Haliburton is kind of like a beige Steve Nash in a way, just a little bit taller, and the way he moves the ball and shares, that's the way that people say that they want to watch basketball. Good defense, sharing the ball, unselfish basketball. Like, if you are a basketball fan, this should be something that you want to watch, even if the series doesn't go very long.
Yeah, that's my thing. I'm just worried that it's not going to be that competitive. I just think Oklahoma City is a lot better. But I've also been selling Indiana short like a lot of this postseason, and they keep proving me wrong, Vinny. So, like, what are the hopes that we actually have, like, great games and a deep series here?
I mean, I'm hoping that we have great games in a deep series despite the fact that I'm ready to go home. You know what I mean? But I think when I look at the Pacers, I look at them as being a team that you cannot sort of, like, push down in a way that they had those games against Cleveland where they kept coming back on the road. They had those games against the Knicks where, you know, those are compelling basketball games late in games because they don't quit. When you come from being down 20 in the fourth quarter, when you come from being down 10 in the last 2 minutes and you make it compelling and you win at the buzzer or whatever the case may be, that keeps the Oklahoma City Thunder on, you know, on their, not on their heels, but it keeps their dander up a little bit. And I think the fact that the Pacers are going to make you play a 48-minute game, even if they're up 15, even if they're up 10, I think the Pacers' reputation will keep fans in it, and I think the Pacers' reputation of being in these playoffs, you know, will keep the games close enough that nobody's going to run away and hide from the other. And I do think Oklahoma City is a historically great team. We're going to look at this team years from now and be like, man, whether this team is a dynasty or not, we're going to say, that team was great.
Well, yeah, and to that point, I mean, everybody focuses in on the offense, right? And obviously you're talking about the league MVP and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think what may set them apart is their defense. Like, you look at pretty much every defensive rating, and they are at the top of the league. And that's what makes this matchup so interesting to me, Vinny, is you got, you know, kind of the high-flying act of the Pacers and the Thunder's ability to defend and how they've shown that all year long. That's really fascinating to me. What do you make of kind of the defense of the Thunder and how big of a factor that's played into why they are where they are?
I mean, I feel like I would be dating myself when I say this, but you guys remember Nolan Richardson's 40 minutes of hell?
Oh, yeah.
In Arkansas. Is that 40 minutes of hell here? It's like 5 or 10 minutes. But in those 5 or 10 minutes of hell, they go on like a 20-3 run. And you can't dribble. You can't pass. You can't get to the rim. You can't shoot. They just unleash hell on you at all positions, whether that's, you know, Alex Caruso, who looks like Elmer Fudd some days, or, you know, Jalen Williams and, you know, Lou Dort, who was high in defensive player of the year voting, or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's an all-defense type of player himself. I think this is a historically great defense, and it's built in a way that you want NBA defenses to look. They're aggressive on the perimeter. They're long. They can defend at the rim. Like, if there is a reason to consider this team a future dynasty, if we're going to ever have one of those things, it is because their defense does things that NBA defenses are not supposed to do at a high level and with such energy and such youth. I think this is one of the best defenses that the NBA has had to offer, you know, probably at least in the past 10 years and maybe in the past 25.
So indulge me a little bit, Vinny. I'm still, just because I'm still sad about Steph Curry's injury and what that series would have been. If that had never happened, I believe they beat Minnesota. But could Golden State have hung with – would that have been a better series, or was this just basically – this was going to be OKC running through the West no matter who took them on in the conference finals?
You know, I once believed in Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny too, you know. No, I think – I tend to agree with you that on some level Golden State would have beaten Minnesota, especially how they looked in Game 1, still in home court advantage. And Steph being the artist that he is, I tend to believe that. But the thing that gets me in the NBA playoffs is that you're playing every other day. And that means for older players, older teams, you start feeling it. The reason that Steph was hurt is because he got old. Not because he got old, but because he is old. And that doesn't change just because you didn't get hurt in Game 1. He might have gotten hurt later, or he might have gotten worn down later because you're playing every other day and then you're traveling and everything else. And those things tend to favor younger teams. Before the NBA playoffs, used to really favor the veteran teams, the teams that knew what they were doing and everything else. Now it seems to favor, you got to have the energy to keep up. You got to have almost like the NFL, where you got to have one superstar and a bunch of guys who are very comfortable in their roles and are young enough to compete at a high level for 14 days, playing every other day, and flying in between. So while I believe that Golden State would have been a better opponent for Oklahoma City, this thing felt like it was ordained. You'd have just seen your heroes go down in flames because this young team is younger, faster, taller, longer, all those things.
So Tyrese Halliburton, it's well publicized at this point, named the most overrated player in the NBA by his peers in a poll that The Athletic did before the playoffs. And we've seen his run here and some of the shots that he's made, just some of the moments that he's had. It's been unbelievable. How do you kind of put into words the postseason that he's had and what that's done for him in terms of the way that he's viewed and kind of his star power moving forward here?
So you mean to tell me that all the people who voted, it was only like maybe like 13 players, to be perfectly honest. It wasn't like a overwhelming margin. But all the people who voted Tyrese Halliburton to be the most overrated player, all that meant was, I don't like Tyrese Halliburton busting my ass. I don't like his get down. I don't like the way that he moves. You think they feel, ah, man, you know what? He's a great player. Have you met NBA players? Have you met athletes? These dudes are prideful. These dudes are competitive as hell and haters and everything else, right? I think it's a natural human thing. But as far as Tyrese himself, so much of the conversation with him has been about his daddy doing the stuff that his daddy was out here doing and everything else. But you're looking at a player who, when you're talking about quote-unquote faces of the NBA and having, you know, characters with like substance and everything else and having a little texture, I think that's the part of it. The Reggie Miller choke thing, even though it's a little dated, people can kind of relate to it. And even if you don't like him, I think it's good for the NBA to have somebody who you have an opinion about, because there's so many players in the league now who have been groomed to be corporations, where you don't see the real them. And the players that maybe you do see, because they didn't grow up that way, turns to be someone like Ja Morant, where you're like, man, can you grow up or whatever? There's not the real polarizing guys that you like. Like, he's a great player, but I really don't mess with him. Or he's a great player, and I really get behind him. So Tyrese Haliburton is close to being as close to being that type of guy because of the histrionics and the antics and everything else and what people have said about him as anybody. And I think that's a positive for the NBA because you don't want the league to be homogenous.
Yeah, I have my own theory, which is that his shot form is weird, and so people just don't think he's as good as he is. But, he's been great as a player, but also as a personality, I agree. All right, Tom Thibodeau firing, Vinny. I find it to be like, you know, the Knicks do something historic this year. It's an incredible story. Their fans get into it. And I understand there's fair criticism of him, like maybe, you know, use the bench more or whatever. I find this to be a total Knicks thing, and they're going to, like, get bounced in the first round next year. Is there any defense for this move?
Well, I tend to think of stuff like this, coach fires. I used to think this was only applied in the NFL, but I really start to think it applies in the NBA too. You can legit make the case to fire 2/3 of any coach in the NBA, in the NFL. You can make the case, right? It may not be a good case, but it's a case. Like, name somebody in your head. You're like, oh, if he got fired tomorrow, I could see it. I could understand it. I wouldn't like it. I think it would be a little ridiculous, but I could understand how they arrived to the point. You fire someone when you get to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in 25 years, and you beat the defending champions, you fire that man because you want to. That means there was nothing that he could have done to legit save his job short of winning a championship. That is James Dolan. That is this weird situation where your best player and your lead assistant are father and son, and your best player plays a game that is very ball dominant, right? And yes, there's the minutes police, there should you use your bench more, and all these other things. But the bottom line is the New York Knicks also looked at Tom Thibodeau and said, the job that we hired you for is not the job that we think you can handle moving forward with the players that we have. You can't change the players. You can't change Karl Towns, Jalen Brunson, some of those other guys. You can change the coach. And as we've seen across the NBA, when teams go into this very punitive second apron, whether that's Milwaukee or Phoenix or some of these other teams, the coach becomes the most expendable person because the teams are so expensive, the expectations are so high. Anything less than a championship is viewed as a failure, and the first person to go is usually the coach.
Yeah, great point. Vinny, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. We're looking forward to the NBA Finals getting underway tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
Joe Rexroth, can I go back to sleep now?
Yes. Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for getting up. Yeah, you got nap time now before shoot around.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it. Vinny Goodwill from Yahoo, our guest on Robbie and Rexroth. Rexroth woke him up. He's ready to go back to sleep there, so I like it.
It's Yahoo day here.
It is. We'll have Charles Robinson coming up here at 8 o'clock. The Rob Rant coming up next. Robbie and Rexroth, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
That does not erase the fact that Vanderbilt has two national championships, took you 3-1 this year, and spanked your rear end.
Wait, what are you talking about?
I think if Tennessee gets to Omaha, then they take that top spot back from Vanderbilt.
I love him.
I'm 5 years older and gout-free.
Oh, they took the top spot back when they took 2 out of 3 in Knoxville and beat them 10-0 in Hoover.
I can assure you that the gap is closing.
You freaking hobgoblin.
Joe wins this week.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. As you heard, a nice victory for Joe Rex Road yesterday in the Jared versus Joe competition. And I have to say, Joe, I was listening to Jared throw this stuff out there about Vanderbilt and Tennessee on the baseball front, and how Vanderbilt has stolen back, I guess, the rivalry from Tennessee because they won 3 out of 4 this year. And in the midst of all this, he's using, like, the history of Vanderbilt baseball and winning 2 national championships to his, like, the favor of his argument. And then totally discounting the fact that Tennessee won the national championship last year and has now advanced to the Super Regionals for the fifth time, which I guess he equates the Super Regionals to the Sweet 16 in basketball and how it's really not that big of a deal. Normally, I'm probably – I don't know if aligned is the right word. I have more of a, I guess, a tolerance and a view of Stilly's takes probably more than most people. Like, I can see where he's going most of the time, and it's like, all right, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I at least understand the thought process. I have no idea what he's talking about here. Absolutely none with Vanderbilt baseball. I don't know why we're like we're cherry-picking what matters and then what doesn't matter in these conversations when it comes to comparing Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Look, we talked about it last week. Vanderbilt had an awesome regular season, right? Like the fact that they did what they did in the second half of the year and won the SEC tournament, and yes, they dominated Tennessee this year. That's all great. It doesn't really mean a whole lot when you do nothing in the postseason. Like, that's what these sports are judged by. And I have no idea what Tennessee's going to do this weekend, if they're going to punch their ticket to Omaha. But the bottom line is they've been to the Super Regional 5 years in a row. They've been to Omaha a few times. They won the national championship last year. They are the better program in college baseball right now between Tennessee and Vanderbilt. And it's really, frankly, over the last few years, not that close. So I don't know what sort of argument we're having here on the Vanderbilt side of it, because they won 3 out of 4. By the way, didn't Tennessee win like 9 out of 10 before that? I mean, it's
– yes.
So, like, I don't understand the arguments that we're making here.
It's an atrocious argument. And it's like you're discounting getting to the Supers. Okay, fine. I mean, I agree. You don't put banners up for getting to the Supers. What do you do for winning the SEC tournament? You know how many teams don't give a rat's about the SEC tournament? And like, they really don't. It's great. I mean, Vanderbilt does, and they put in, and it's good for them. 2 out of the last 3 years they've won it, got themselves a great seed, and fallen on their face. Like, there's no argument. Like, any place you want to look, other than, yes, Vanderbilt has a 2-to-1 edge in championships. But then why are you making the big deal because they won 3 or 4 this year head-to-head? Again, head-to-head has been dominated. And while Tennessee has gone to 5 straight, Vanderbilt has not gone to 4 straight second weekends. I'm sorry, like, it's not close right now. But I have a problem with you saying that you're normally, like, fine with his take. You want me to start rattling off some Stilly takes for you?
I'm saying for most of his takes, I can at least understand his thought process, which may be just a product of me being around him for as long as I have. I don't know.
Ellie Tolvanen, Forsberg is the floor.
That was a special one.
I mean, I got to say, you know, speaking of this grid and all the hard work we do, I mean, we work hard, guys. My God.
We do.
Typing in the grid.
Yeah.
This says Stilly's take on Vanderbilt Tennessee baseball may be his worst.
It's pretty
ever.
Bad. Like, now, you just bring up the Tolvanen one.
We
I forgot
could,
about that
We
one.
Could do it all. Greatest hits here. That yeah. would be pretty special.
The Tolvanen one I forgot about. Be honest with you. That was a good one.
What are some of your favorites, Ian, since we're –
Oh, man, there's just so many. It's hard to – one that really stands – he had a really bad Bryce Drew take 1 year where he thought Bryce Drew was taking Vandy to the Final Four.
Mm. Yeah, no, it was – yeah, he said something like, Bryce Drew will take this program to Final Fours or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But I think the thing that strikes me about this one is it's very un-Stilly-like, because most of the time the playoffs and the postseason are what he cares about, right? Like, we want to win. We don't want to almost win. Isn't that what he says?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, like, the postseason doesn't matter. It's not, you know, Vanderbilt having zero success in the postseason over the last 4 years just doesn't matter right now.
Yeah. No, it's an atrocious argument. I mean, no argument for me with you that it's an atrocious argument. I also like the 9-minute run when it was like 1:47 before the TV timeout. That was great.
That was good.
That was really special.
That was a good one. A 9-minute run.
A 9-minute run.
We'll have Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. We'll get his thoughts.
9-minute run.
There we go, baby.
The Titans and all things NFL. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.